2015, I was diagnosed with stage 4 HPV throat cancer. It was my right tonsil and a very large lump by the side of by the tonsil. I've been feeling unwell for about 4 months. I've been very fit and healthy for many years now, a cyclist and a runner, and I was feeling increasingly tired, particularly at the end of a working day. I would come home and I would sleep for an hour and a half, and then food was beginning to get caught in my throat, and I had 4 or 5 streaming colds in 4 months. So I made a couple of trips to my GP. The first time I was diagnosed with sinusitis and was given antibiotics, and then when they didn't work, I went back and I started complaining about an earache and the pain on my down sort of just below my ear and down my neck. And that was when alarm bells rang for my GP. And that was when I had an appointment. I was seen within a week, and I was diagnosed. I referred to ENT and was diagnosed straight away, because it was very obvious. I had an endoscopy, a camera down the throat, and there it was very happily sitting, beginning to block my airway. So I was weeks away from collapsing, having a blocked airway. So within eight days later, I was in hospital. I had my tonsil removed. I had the enormous lump removed, and I had a tracheostomy fitted. And that was because they were concerned about swelling. Right, so then once I came, I spent 2 weeks in hospital in intensive care and then in a high dependency ward. Came out, did a bit of recovery for a week or so, and then was straight into 6 weeks of very high dosage chemotherapy. That was then followed another break to recover from that, because that was fairly grueling. And then another break of a week or so, and I was 30 days into radiotherapy with additional chemotherapy. So that spanned from May 7th, and then my last treatment was September the 5th. So now you're talking about, 6 months there. Was I fearful for my life? But everybody around me, it was a really interesting reaction. Everybody around me, they were utterly shocked, because I've been very fit and healthy, as I said earlier, for many years. And I was the last person they expected it to happen. My wife didn't talk about being a widow, but I think there was some fear in her. Did I fear for my life? Yes, of course I did. And I still worry occasionally when little bits happen. I think, oh, what is this? But I was given very clear and positive messages without any assurances from the very beginning that they expected a full recovery, because I had no comorbidities. That meaning very little alcohol, healthy lifestyle, no smoking, generally fit and healthy. So they looked upon me as a good candidate for full recovery. There were no secondary cancers. Because of the location, the throat and neck, obviously that's a very busy part of the body. And so there was some there was some activity, but it was as a consequence of the first stage of cancer.
So before you got this thing, Steve, did you share the view that you suggest some others around you had, that fit and healthy people don't get cancer?
That's an interesting question. I think I'm probably like the one in two people who don't get cancer. I didn't believe that I was a candidate for it. And I mean, this is very important because and significant, because my daughter, who was the first year of being vaccinated against HPV, I did like the rest of the nation. I connected HPV. I didn't connect HPV and cervical cancer. And so, you know, having been through this experience, I've got a much broader and much more realistic view of what HPV cancer is.
At what stage did you learn that it was an HPV cancer?
Right, they were fair because of the nature of right at the beginning. They were trying to work out whether it was the HPV cancer that was sexually transmitted or intimacy. I think that's a kind of, you know, shared HPV contracted through intimacy, I think is a much better way of putting it, as opposed to the other HPV cancer, which was kind of traditionally with older men who were smokers and drinkers and worked in heavy industry and were subject to the HPV through environmental issues. They were trying to work out which one. They were fairly certain it was the HPV, but I would say from point of diagnosis, I probably learned 3 weeks later, confirmation that it was HPV cancer, the one that's contracted through intimacy.
How did that make you feel?
I've never taken a moral line on it. You know, kind of the becoming HPV positive was not for me about promiscuity or not about promiscuity. It was just one of those things that had happened. I was neither condemning of myself or moralistic about it. My viewpoint is that my job from that point when I was diagnosed was to get better. That was my sole job.
What about the fact that it could have been prevented?
That's interesting, yeah. Because, I mean, I kind of made a film, a five-minute film supporting the vaccination of boys, and it is utterly preventable. And I now increasingly hold a strong view that the government have a really short-sighted view of how to prevent HPV cancer. I just think it's now come down to economics. And, for example, the average debt that a person who's diagnosed with cancer incurs is £30,000. So there clearly is not thinking beyond treatment versus vaccination of boys.
If you had a son, Steve, would you have him vaccinated?
Most certainly, if I had a son, I would get him vaccinated. I think if I had a young son now, even if he was sexually active, I would get him vaccinated, and I would recommend all parents. And when I do come across people with young children, and I'm not evangelical about it, and I don't preach about it, but I just talk to parents who have got young children, and I just talk to them about the pros for their getting their sons vaccinated. It's a very gentle sell, actually, and I talk about the fact that girls are vaccinated, and that's a protection against cervical cancer and throat cancer and anal cancer. And then I talk about the fact that there seems to be a belief held that boys won't get it because the girls are vaccinated. And I explain that I feel that it's a very unsophisticated way of looking at prevention. What I think the government failed to do is kind of look at the bits beyond recovery, because when I was recovering, I then spent another year on another level of recovery that fortunately for me didn't have an impact on employment, simply because I am and was very fit and healthy. But I've known people who have had feed lines in their stomach for 6 years because they started in a quite an unhealthy position, and it took a long time for them to recover. And actually, when you have 6 years of a feed line in your stomach, there are two things going on there. One, are you capable of work? And two, I suffered enormous emotional impact from this. And I think for it to have been prolonged would have made it even worse. The emotional impact of going through this cannot be underestimated. It literally is that old adage that cancer doesn't only affect the person who's going through the treatment, but, you know, it had a profound impact on my wife and daughter, without a doubt. And it has changed relationships. And it's also, I mean, particularly with my wife and I, we've had to find a new way of being, because it changes. It changes everything. And it's been difficult, and sometimes it still is difficult, and fortunately we've recovered, but it still kind of creeps in. And, you know, she's seen me in a terrible state, and you know, from my end, I felt in a miserable, wretched state. And that has left its scar. And I'll be quite specific about this. I'm a person who was, prior to this, who kind of had never suffered with panic or emotional outbursts or some stuff like that. But post-treatment and into recovery, I would get enormous anxiety. Initially, it was to do with a complete loss of confidence. And then, once I was out in the world and integrating and operating and thinking beyond cancer, what would happen was that I'd, say, be cycling to work, and then I'd have this enormous physical anxiety that I could feel purging around my body, and it would sit there for an hour. And it was, you know, it was quite significant. And it wasn't, oh, I'm going to die of cancer. It was none of that. It just kind of, something brought it on. It was perhaps a thought, or I was doing something, or perhaps something somebody said. And then it would bring on anxiety, a general anxiety, not a specific anxiety.
Do you still experience that now?
No, I don't. I mean, I've done a number of things to move myself away from that. I'm not saying I'm fully recovered, and kind of never say never, but I don't know if you're aware, but I was approached to do a big, and I think this is not insignificant, I did to do a row, for a 200-mile row, supporting it was for another cancer charity, to row from Ibiza to Barcelona over the summer. And I was on the crew, I was the only person who had suffered with HPV and recovered. And, you know, obviously kind of that was one of the reasons why I was there. But also there was nowhere to hide. So I've done quite big endurance stuff to almost counterbalance the extreme that I went through with the treatment. But I am going to say never, because I might wake up tomorrow full of anxiety.